This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? Let me tell you, it's a delicious, sugar-free, electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With a variety of delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt, while my favorite is grapefruit. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice or games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product, and I am replenishing our supply on a weekly basis. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first order, Element is giving us a 150% commission. That means if you spend $100, we get $150 to keep this podcast running. The best deal you can get is to buy an insider bundle. You buy three boxes, you get one free. And if you click our affiliate link, drinkelement.com/JustinClimo, we will get a commission and you will get a free sample pack with every purchase. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you will be instantly refunded. Let's talk about sleep for a minute. I've had a terrible time getting productive rest and sleep for the last few years. And since poor sleep can lead to all sorts of health problems, I'm constantly on the hunt for a better night's sleep. Recently, I came across a new product called Beam Dream, which has delivered the best sleep I've had in a long time. The first time I tried it, I fell asleep on the couch within a half hour and didn't wake up until the next day. Since starting my new routine with Beam, my sleep performance has improved significantly according to both my Oura Ring and Whoop Band. Yes, I use both at once because why not have more data? If you are interested in upgrading your sleep, I invite you to try Beam Dream. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Now available in delicious seasonal flavors like cinnamon cacao, sea salt caramel, and white chocolate peppermint. Better sleep has never tasted better. A recent clinical study revealed that 93% of users wake up feeling more refreshed, and 93% reported that Dream helped them get a more restful night's sleep. If you're looking for a way to get some rest and you have trouble sleeping, I highly recommend this product. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of their biggest sale of the year and get up to 50% off for a limited time. When you go to shopbeam.com/contacts, discount auto applied at checkout, no code is necessary. That's shopbeam.com/contacts for up to 50% off. If you're a longtime listener, you might know that I've been drinking AG1 for a couple of years. If you're not a longtime listener, then know that I drink AG1 on a daily basis. When I first started drinking it daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health. I had more energy, I felt more relaxed, I could focus better. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs, like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter and better way to elevate your baseline health. I recommend AG1 to all of my family and friends because it has worked so well for me. So much so that my two eldest children have become regular users of the product. My daughter, who has been studying abroad, recently asked us to bring her more product when we went to visit her at Thanksgiving. My other daughter, who's a freshman in college, regularly contacts us to make sure we send her more product. AG1 has been transformational as it has replaced all of the needless ramekins of vitamins and minerals that I used to take. If you really want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/contacts That's drinkag1.com/contacts to order your own supply and start on your journey to better health. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein. Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We're joined today by Brett Peterson, athletic director at the Dixon High School in Dixon, California. Go Rams. Coach, thanks for being on today.
Appreciate it, man. Big fan of the pod and excited to do this.
Great. Let's start by letting the audience know who you are. So give us your background. How did you get into coaching? Being an athletic administrator, your process for that, but also the runway that led to this being your line of work.
Yeah, man, sports, getting into the coaching realm of things started when I was really young. When I was 15, 16 years old, my first job was in youth sports and recreation in the town I grew up in, Vacaville. Loved doing it, reffing kids, flag football games, basketball games, running little youth clinics and camps, sports camps in the summer. I just had a passion for it and I was good at it. Went to Wilsey Wood in Vacaville, played three or four sports there, loved everything about sports and the culture it brought to high schools. Graduated there, went to Solano for 2 years, started my coaching right away out of high school, was coaching. I did 2 years of track at Wilsey Wood while I was playing basketball at Solano. Played basketball at Solano under, as we talked about, the legendary John Nagel. Loved it. I think he was one of my biggest mentors and was somebody who I really aspired to be like and wanted to go into that passion of just educating and coaching and developing those relationships through sports. After Solano, I headed up to Chico, started to get my teaching credential, got my bachelor's in kinesiology, the minor in coaching and admin. Looking for a college job, once again, just said, hey, Chico is big in the youth sports and recreation and hopped into that. And it's a great job. I do push anybody, any young athletes that are listening. It's a great job for student athletes. It's flexible and you get to work with kids and coach. And after that, I was coaching in the meantime, all up there at Chico High. I did a few years of track and field. My student teaching, I was up at a very small school called Los Molinos. Which I coached everything under the sun. I coached girls golf, girls basketball, and JV football at a school of less than 200 students. So that was an interesting experience. Landed in Dixon with a part-time elementary PE job. It was close to home. Saved some money. Loved it. Elementary PE is the best teaching job on the planet, if you ask me. Started coaching right away. Did a few years of JV and then hopped into varsity as a young coach at 24, 25 years old. Blinked twice and my superintendent decided to make me the AD halfway through the first semester. Didn't see it coming. Was coaching multiple sports, varsity sports, and all of a sudden I had the AD hat and I moved up to the high school and it was trying to take like a drink of water out of a fire hose from some of the other ADs had told me. And so being like an 26, 27 years old, trying to figure it out while maintaining the head coaching position was pretty tough, but I managed through it. Coached many different sports in the Dixon Unified School District, mainly varsity basketball for 9 years, and then had a baby girl last year and decided to step back from coaching some of the programs that take more of your time and just concentrated on the teaching aspect, athletics, and being a full-time dad.
Congratulations on that. It's always good to join the ranks of parents, gives you some perspective that you maybe didn't have before. Let's dive into what you said here, that elementary PE is the greatest job on the planet. What I'm curious about is what did you learn there that informed your approach to coaching that may have been different from your experience as an athlete?
Oh, man, it's funny that you just brought that up. I was just talking to one of my VPs about my elementary PE time. Discipline and structure is everything. And with first, second, and third graders, they are super excited to see their PE teacher. And the teacher's excited to see you because you're giving them their prep at a break. But you're dealing with, you know, elements and distractions and little kids who are fired up. And so if you don't have structures and disciplines put in place, it is going to make your life really difficult. And the kids want the structure and discipline. It's the same way all the way up through high school. When I used to do practice plans, when I'm doing my teaching lesson plans for my ninth graders, for my 12th graders, everything is, if you have structures put in place and you have the disciplines there, even if the kids are going to push back, they want it. I was like, I had second grade classes that could almost run themselves through PE just because it was routines. It was they knew what to expect from me. And once they got it down, they appreciated that. And so that's what I did with my coaching as well. And it was like there were structures in the beginning of practices every day that the athletes came in, they knew they needed to be 15 minutes early so that they were ready to roll. They knew that they needed to get themselves into their warmups. They knew that they had to do a team meeting before I even came over to discuss. They knew that those were the things that, and if we didn't do that, they knew something was off that day and it would throw practice for a loop.
So in your attempt to instill those things, as you started off coaching other disciplines, track and field, football, girls golf, etc., how did that inform your approach to coaching when you finally became the head basketball coach?
That's one of the main things that I wanted to preach on here today is we preach to multiple sport athletes, right? You hear that a lot. Hey, we want kids to play multiple sports and develop different skills and be with different teams and get advice from different coaches. We need to practice what we preach, right? And so I think that it was very good for me to coach other sports. It gave me a break from basketball is everything. We had fall ball, we had spring ball, we had summer. So it was 9-10 months out of the year. And being able to go out to track and field was a relief for me. I really enjoyed coaching it, but it was a completely different style of coaching. It switched things up for me. I got to see kids in different areas outside the gym. I got to have different relationships with some of my athletes that I coached in basketball. And it really helped me develop as a coach, just especially I think with coaching individual sports, it brings a whole new light to working with the athlete one-on-one, where I think in team sports, it's really hard to continue to maintain coaching the team as a whole and making sure you have that one-on-one time with the athletes and making sure you're meeting their needs. And so I would push to any coach that is full-time in their profession, whatever that lane may be as a coach, to coach other sports as well, whether it just be something small like a youth sport or an assistant to the golf coach. Get out, give yourself a break, give yourself a reset, and see what it's like to coach kids outside of your realm.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I spent 4 years coaching travel softball and haven't done it in probably 7 or 8 years. And I miss those days. It was something I look forward to where it was not basketball, but it wasn't just because of that. It was just something else that was a different age group, different gender, different discipline. So I would agree with all of what you just said. Let's go back to when you became the head coach at 24, became the AD, it sounds like 26. What are some things you realized right away, even though you've been coaching since you were 18, that you needed to figure out that you were ready, but you weren't ready?
I was ready, but not ready. That's funny you put it that way. Because since I had coached like literally anything that somebody asked me to coach, from T-ball to, like I said, junior high girls volleyball to golf, football, I wanted to coach. I just loved it. I loved coaching. I loved working with student athletes. So I had all that. I knew the sports and I knew what it took. But being a young AD and a young coach, I think it was just taking the time to develop the relationships, understanding that you don't have those experiences yet as an AD and as a varsity coach running a program. And you have to give yourself the patience to develop that experience. You need to know that it's not going to happen in a couple weeks, a couple months. It's going to be a couple years before you go through some trials and tribulations to figure out how to work through things. Even if you get advice from other people, that personal experience is huge. And then being a young coach and a young AD, almost every game, the referees would come up to my assistant coaches and shake their hands like for the ref meeting. And I just got used to that and I was okay with it. I almost took it as like a compliment. The same thing is that when I was the AD, I was the youngest coach on staff in Dixon. So all the coaches that I was now technically helping oversee and work with were older than me. So it was very intimidating. But I think creating like just meaningful relationships with each coach and understanding this, hey, I'm not your boss. I'm just here to make your job easier and help in any way. I think that really helped get me on the right foot. And then obviously now I've been in it for 6, 7 years. I've had those experiences, so I got a little bit know more what to expect. And I'm new experiences every day, man. It doesn't stop.
That's the fun part of our job. I want to go in a little bit deeper on the dynamic that you just described, which is I was the youngest coach on campus and I'm the athletic director, and all of my colleagues and direct reports are older than me. Can you offer some specific techniques and things you did to navigate that? And also some ways in which it still didn't work and you had to pivot to figure out how to navigate each individual relationship, because one size doesn't fit all.
Yeah, being an AD is a lot like being a coach, especially of a team sport, right? You have multiple personalities on a team, different types of needs, a differentiated teaching and coaching style. You have to use it as an AD because coaches are all great people, man. These are people who are pretty much volunteering to sign up to work with young adults, but their personalities go all over the place. And so I think being present, being there, walking out to practices and just showing up, saying hello, hi, how are you doing today? Understanding that I'm available at all times. That's a blessing and a curse. My coaches know that they can call me, text me whenever they need anything, and I'm going to try and get back to them as soon as I can. But obviously that comes with my phone is blowing up from 3 to 11 p.m. at night. But that's okay. I want them to know that, hey, they know I'm going to get back to them right away, and I'm going to be here to support them, and I'm going to do my very best because I'm invested in them and their program, especially the student athletes. And so I think that was the big piece, is just showing that I cared a lot. And I think once they saw that I cared a lot about our kids at our school, them as coaches, I think that helped. And obviously there's still certain situations that I needed to find a different path to like win over that coach. And that's case by case.
So Eddie and I talked recently about the role confusion that can happen sometimes when you are working with a colleague, a former colleague, where you happen to be on the same level. And now once you put the AD hat on, whether by intention or not, it takes on a little more weight. Talk about a situation in which you were trying to advise, trying to support, and maybe there was a miss because, hey, the guy that I worked with for 3 years on the same level is now the AD, and what I offered was a directive, not a suggestion, or vice versa. I was just making suggestions and they felt a certain way about how you were trying to advise.
Yeah, I was already the varsity coach and I wasn't on site yet before I became AD. And then so all of a sudden I had this different hat where I think that was one of the most intimidating pieces, is that I'm basically working with our coaches and putting guidelines out and what needs to be done and what needs to be taken care of. And now I really need to make sure I'm holding myself accountable to the things that I'm saying. And that can be really difficult. And going back to what I just said, that making sure that there's transparency and you're honest and open and create that relationship to where they understand that I'm going to have to come in sometimes and be the bad guy, but it's not personal, I think is huge. And you create those relationships over time. You can't just have only one or two conversations with a coach and all of a sudden be able to come in and just expect that they're going to react well when you have to say, hey, you need to get rid of this kid or this coach, or you're doing this incorrectly with paperwork. But if you have that established relationship where there's that line of respect there, it helps. But no matter what, the AD it's a sticky job because you're going to have some really uncomfortable conversations. And that kind of just comes with the job. And I don't know if it's Coach K or somebody, but like the confrontation is the truth head on. That's the way I've always looked at it. And so it's ugly, but it's the truth. And so you should be okay with it, because when two people are telling the truth to each other, it can be very confrontational, but you're going to learn from it and you're going to grow from it.
No, I like that. And to our PGC roots, it's truth over harmony, right? And how do you get to the other side of that. And it always starts with at least acknowledging, as my former boss said, the facts that are not in dispute and starting there. Let me follow up with this. You made a comment earlier about learning and growing, and you can't understand things you haven't experienced yet. And one of my other mentors talks about how you can get knowledge from books, but you can only get wisdom over time. So talk a little bit about things you've learned over 7 years that you understood getting into the deal, but you hadn't seen it yet. And it didn't really resonate until you had the wisdom of time and experience. And obviously there's a lot of that to still glean, like when you mentioned Sandy and getting him on board, because he has that. But talk a little bit about that in your role as both the basketball coach, or hell, any sport coach, and as
the reason why I like your pod so much is it's contacts. It's developing those contacts that, you know, you have a big network of friends, colleagues, coaches that you can lean on and talk to, right? And bounce things off of. I think as a younger coach coming up, and I coach with other younger coaches, but I think our generation in general, it's like, hey, we already know what to do. We already got this taken care of. I know. And it's like complete BS. And I think people are sometimes afraid to just ask for help and seek guidance. And it was like I told you when I became the varsity coach, I reached out to Sandy Simpson. Basically, I reached out to the one person in our community who I knew was like top basketball coach. And I'm just like, hey, let's go out for lunch. I want to pick your brain. I'm just going to take as many notes as I can. And I think that's one of the things that's really helped me. And it's listen to anyone and everyone, because all opinions actually really do matter, even if they're good, bad, or somewhere in between. And I think that's the one thing that's really helped me is listening to all my stakeholders, whether it be my administration, my student athletes, my coaches, assistant coaches, parents, somebody watching the game that I didn't know. And it's if you have the time and you want to talk to me, I'm gonna listen whether I like it or not, and I'm gonna hopefully take something from it and learn. I think that's one of the things that being a young coach, I got to work with a lot of coaches that were older than me. I had Bob Wogowski, who was here, who was an ex coach. I got to work with, Pav. I played for Waddell, Coach Nagel, and all this. You could always hear that when I was in high school, and I had heard about it, there's all these camps that all the coaches used to go coach at all the time. And I think that's gotten away from us a little bit. There's not as many, it's all AAU based. So the coaches go, they all coach AAU or go training instead of going to these ABC camps or Sly Park or whatever it is. And then it's networking, right? And so I think now this is the networking, right? With podcasts and things like that, which is great because you can do it at any time. But I think there's something to those in-person conversations and working with other colleagues, bouncing ideas, stealing is huge. And I think that's one of the things that I've leaned on the most, steal as much as I can.
To your point, you need to be vulnerable. You need to know that there's more knowledge out there to have, even if you have certain things you feel like you're a master of. And it's what I'm going through right now in regards to like how to teach the game to a new group of athletes that hasn't been with me for 8 years, where you have some embedded practices, routines, systems to you're starting from scratch. And you made a comment about talk to as many people as possible, get as much information as possible. And absolutely correct. The caveat to that, especially as a younger coach or leader, is how do you now eliminate all of this noise that's coming in that you're seeking out to keep the main thing, right? And so ultimately, you're like, you're struggling, this isn't working. I just talked to you about a defensive thing and how hard is it to implement? And it's like, what's the balance? How have you figured out as a coach yourself and as a mentor to advise on that thing in regards to, these are all the things I want to do, I'm hearing all this cool stuff, but wait, hold on, you got to narrow the funnel.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Yeah, because you're going to hear a lot of noise, but less is more, right? You're going to hear everyone and you're going to take the notes down and you're just going to have to mentally weed out, hey, I really like that. I want to implement that. And hey, that I heard that. I now understand what it means, but that's just not for me. It's not for my program. And I used to, when I did what my coaching handbook and my student athlete handbook looked like, I tried to make it as like simple as possible. And we went off of that. Originally, I went out and it was like, create all these goals. We would have a meeting with the whiteboard and what do we want to have a free throw percentage and how many games do we want to win? And the whole whiteboard was full and the kids were involved in it. And I thought this was everything until I read a book, Metcalf and Gilbert, the Burn Your Goals book. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I like need. It's because I was much more like that. And it was like, burn all your goals. And I was like, what? we had a rough game, and I went in the next day. I was like, I wrote all the goals on the whiteboard. This is like halfway through the season, and I just raced them all. Like, I was like, we're getting rid of these. They're gone. We're just going to focus on process. We're going to focus day to day and just get better piece by piece. And that book was pretty like life-changing for my coaching, because it, I simplified everything. I made everything day by day process. Every game, I put up a box on the whiteboard, and I put what we could control and what we couldn't control. Right. And they put what we could control inside the box. And I, the athletes would write down what they could control in the game, and what they couldn't control. Couldn't control refs, couldn't control what other people said, couldn't control somebody on the other team going off for 9 threes and just having their night. We can control how we talk to each other, how we act, how, what we do, making sure that we stick to our processes and our disciplines and our sets. And that really helped. And I think trying to simplify everything was the way I approached it. We went by we were okay with 3 L's. These are the 3 L's that I was definitely not okay with. And it wasn't losing a game. It was, don't lie, don't be lazy, don't be late. And they just knew if you did one of those 3 things, I was going to be super upset. But if we lost the game, it is what it was. We're going to learn from it. We're going to move on. As coaches, we're all going to be a little frustrated and go home and think of how we can get better. But those are the only 3 L's that I could not stand in my program. My kids just knew that.
As a multi-sport coach, can you offer an example of something you took directly from another sport and applied to basketball as a way to show how we don't always look for things in places where they're not obvious? And you've heard me on the show, water polo practices right outside my window, and I'm watching them and trying to steal. But do you have any specific examples that you can offer? Either you saw somebody else doing or you did it yourself, where it was like, I'm a basketball coach, but hey, the soccer team was doing this and we're going to implement it because it's so transformational.
Yeah, I think I would go and there's a coach that I worked with that celebrated all of the little wins, like instead of the big wins, which I thought was huge. Like small things that happen, celebrations happened in practice right away. And the whole team celebrated. And if a teammate saw something that a other teammate did, that teammate would celebrate that teammate. So it created this culture of celebrating like all the little things. And so I tried to implement that a little bit more in my practice and just trying to celebrate things that weren't wins, losses, making playoffs, things of that nature, and start celebrating some of the smaller things that were a little bit more culture and life building, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And from that, in addition to doing that, what would you say is the best thing that you do in your program that has the largest ripple effect on culture? Meaning, as the basketball coach, this was a non-negotiable. This was really a pin in who we are that we could always go back to. Or as the AD, the tennis team is doing X, and it really has this impact that transcends beyond the court and the competition.
Yeah. So one of the things that I implemented was I tried to empower the student athletes and develop their leadership. I think us as coaches, a lot of times we hand out the captain hat, right? And we designate kids, or if you have your team, vote for kids. And then you're like, hey, you're a captain now, so you need to be like a captain. And then that's the last conversation you have with them about being a captain. And we just expect a 15, 16, 17 year old student to have leadership skills to lead their peers. And I was really big on working with my captains through leadership. My captain spoke at the beginning of every practice, at the end of every practice, whether it was a couple words or they went on a rant. They spoke after every single game. Captains got really comfortable talking in front of the team and taking ownership of the team and became an extension, a key extension of the program. And I think that really helped, because usually your captains are some of the kids that other students look up to. And if they're showing vulnerability and ownership, that's going to get buy-in from your other athletes that maybe you're having a harder time to reach. And so it was working with those kids and making sure that they develop those leadership skills to succeed amongst their peers, which in my mind, hopefully really helped them succeed after high school. And of course, pushing leadership for all the students and developing the ownership of the non-captain as well. But it was a big piece that I used that really helped.
Yeah, the more you can get that leadership and buy-in from the athletes themselves, it speaks to the cliche that a player-led team is going to beat a coach-led team any day, right? And there's a fine balance of trying to teach that and then getting in your own way of just constantly being talking. And that's something that, as I shift teams this year, it's something that I'm trying to be more cognizant about, because you're building this culture and you're trying to do these things and you had it in another place. And it's just, okay, what did I forget how to do based on it being in place for 8 years? And I think going back though, again, to you're constantly exploring your blind spots, you're constantly exploring what it is you're trying to accomplish and what other techniques exist. And so I like to ask this, what's something you've most recently changed your mind on where I used to be dug in here and actually now I'm over here and here's why?
Well, before I forget, going back to that piece, one of the big things the last couple of years I was coaching that I think I had heard Patino was like the guy who was big on it. It was the 7 seconds or less. And I think with our up and coming generation, awesome kids, and they know a lot, but they're TikTok and Instagram and all this stuff. They need stuff like quick and right now. And if I had to explain a drill, I would fully explain the drill to make sure that everyone understood. If there's any clarifying questions, I'd answer those. That would take more than 7 seconds. If I had to stop a drill and my kids knew, I'd tell them, I was like, give me my 7 seconds. And I would make sure whatever tweak I made was try to be 7 seconds or less than that tweak, because I knew as an athlete, I hated when the coach would stop when we would be in some game action, 3-on-3, whatever. If we had a coach that continuously stopped and they would talk for 5 minutes, I'd get cold and I'd check out and all this. I was in the gym because I wanted to play. Kids want to play. They don't want to just listen to half the practice to the coach talk. And there's certain times where you definitely need to, but I tried to be very quick about little tweaks and I'd keep them engaged. So they knew it's like, you need to stay engaged for 7 seconds and then make this fixed. And so this, I'd stop practice, but I would make sure when I stopped practice, it was very quick. And then we get on to the next drill. But going back to what was your original question?
I'm going to follow up on that very quickly. Mike Dunlap talked about that years ago where it was praise, prompt, leave. So that whatever your model of instruction or pedagogy there, keeping things moving. And then I would say Tyler, Costin, and Dustin talked about that a lot at, if it's going to be longer than 7 seconds or five, you need to bring them in and then send them back out. Because ultimately, if you're going to make a quick adjustment on the fly in, say, basketball, you can make that quickly without bringing everybody in and stopping the flow. But if you're going to be longer than that, then you need to bring them in so that there's a focus and go back out. All of that to get back to my question, which is, what have you most recently changed your mind on? Like, I used to believe this and now I'm over here and here's why.
You always hear the kids are different. I know it's a lot, but it's, I think I've changed my mind on they are, but they're not. More and more trying to put myself in their shoes. And we talked about experiences as an AD and as a coach and not having those experiences and just giving yourself time to develop those. I think with our student athletes now, they're exposed to so much and they show that they know a lot, but ultimately they haven't had those experiences. And so sometimes when that happens, we forget how much they're just still kids. Because you can have much more adult-like conversations with some of the student athletes than from what I remember having conversations with coaches. And I just think I'm big on, hey, these are kids. And before I was like, no, they need to be young adults. They need to be mature and all this. And I go back, they're kids. They're learning and they're developing experiences every day, and experiences provide the most value. And they're going to fail. And they might think they know a lot more than they know, but they don't, and that's okay. And I'm more now, a lot more like, hey, I'm going to be here for when you fall. But before it was like, no, you need to learn and figure it out. Because I try and put myself in their shoes. What would I have done when I was 16, 17 years old? From when I was a young coach, it was like I had to, when I was 23, 24, I had to act as like a much more mature adult because the age gap was smaller. And so I think I was a lot more strict and trying to show that, hey, I'm not close in age to you. And now that I'm, the gap is a little bit farther. Now I think I'm a little bit more empathetic. Before I wasn't.
You said something that I thought was really interesting, which is their kids. And what does it look like from their perspective, which led me to have kind of an aha moment, which for the group I'm coaching now is what does it feel like to have beginner's mind again? Because ultimately the wisdom that we've gleaned over the years, I'm playing chess. And for lack of a better term, they're playing checkers. And so it's, what are the questions to ask to get into the space of their mind so we can better serve? And that's something that I got to figure out in regards to where the struggle in comprehension is. And yeah, I think that's something that resonated with me. Talk a little bit about that in regards to how do you get into the mind in this case, right? You've coached basketball for however many years, and you're actually now coaching people that have never done it. What does that look like to get into that space?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And shout out to Tyler, Dustin, Brett, the whole PGC crew, man, because I learned so much from them when I was, you know, developing as a coach. One of the things that Dustin and Brett always said a lot was like, you got to start with the why. And I think a lot of times we just jump into it. And if they can't, if you're student athletes, and this goes into the classroom as well, it goes into anything. Why are we doing this? And they need to be able to answer that before they even get into the drill. So when you're, this goes for any sport, right? It's like, why am I training like this? Or why am I doing this drill? You're doing this drill because it's a part of this offense. You're doing this drill to develop this skill that's going to help you succeed on the field, in the pool, on the court. And so that's a big piece, the why and the front end. And then a big piece that I've really started developing in the classroom is clarifying questions. Kids are so intimidated to ask questions, whether it be to their coach, their teacher, whoever it might be. And so you need to pull clarifying questions. And I, when I used to do drills, I would start with the why. We talk about the drill, what we're getting out of it. And then I demand that we can't start the drill until I get three clarifying questions. And they didn't need to be super difficult questions, but you just need to clarify, hey, are we supposed to do this in the drill? How long are we doing this drill? Head coach, I didn't understand what you meant when we talked about how we should come off of that screen. So then even if that kid, I knew what he was talking about, he had to create in his mind a question that was a part of the drill. So it kept people engaged. But that question could be seven other kids didn't understand what I meant when I talked about that. So then it allowed me to revisit and made sure that as coaches, we think we explained it perfectly and, hey, this is how it's done. And that is never the case. We may think it's like, how did you guys not get this? I explained it exactly how I wanted it to be run. And nine kids were running it wrong. So that means it was the coach's fault. So clarifying, asking the clarifying questions, it probably helped me more as a coach than it did even the athletes, because I'd figure out what I was not getting across to a majority of the team.
It's funny you said that. I just told the girls yesterday that part of the things I was asking them were a direct result of that concept where, you know, how many of you struggle with math? Great. How many of your math teachers would say they've covered the concept 15 times? Yeah. So ultimately, it's like there's the teaching and then there's the learning. And where's the disconnect in regards to things that I'm trying to teach and aren't landing? And how can I better instruct that, right? And so that's the nature of trying to explore the role that, let's say, I play in the dysfunction versus it being like, yeah, they just don't get it. And it's, that's a shift as well as an adult, as a leader, in regards to you can only control the things that you are doing. So how do you dive into that to figure out how to better serve? And like you said, you demanded three clarifying questions so that you at least know there's some back and forth, and maybe you're tacking a few more of the pieces that are confusing. Here's another question for you, and I'd be curious to get your take on this. I get a lot of questions on if this happens, then what? And my answer is always, it depends, because the way that we're playing, it's all read-based. And so when a student athlete wants a binary answer and the world doesn't work that way, yet that's how their brains work, where it's so literal, they need that and even in order to get to the conceptual. What have you found, or have you found anything that works in that situation?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Here's a perfect example. When, let's say you're teaching the traps that you worked on, or I'm teaching the run and jump, and a particular situation happens and you're debriefing it, and it's, so I should have gone up there. And so every time I do this, and it's in that particular situation, yes. In regards to every time, no. They want the binary, and it just doesn't exist in our sport, at least.
No. Yeah. And I've coached teams where it's, hey, you're going to run to the elbow and flash, and that's where you're going to look to receive the ball, but it's, you'll have the kid flash right behind the defender. And it's, this is the elbow, coach. This is where I should be. And it's, don't, run behind the defender, run, you could run to different spaces. And that's, I think, as a coach, part of the fun part of the game is you get kids who super get it. And you get kids who have, they struggle with that piece. And once again, we can always fall back on those experiences, but kind of, I would naturally, my first reaction would be like, hey, you got to go with your gut. You got to go with your first initial reaction. Cause usually your first initial reaction is going to be your best reaction. And then if it was the wrong reaction, hopefully we've established that relationship from coach to athlete that I'm going to be able to help you fix it. You've now had that experience. And then hopefully the next time you do it, it doesn't happen again. Now, if the next time it happens again, we need to reassess and try and figure out what we're doing wrong. But I'm going to, yeah, I think the biggest struggle with this is we, and that's why I was so big on like the U sports, and I loved coaching the U sports, and it's getting those kids those experiences at early ages, because by the time you get them up to high school, it is really difficult to understand those underlying concepts. I think that's what you're asking about. And get kids in sports at young ages, get them in multiple sports, and they can find those things out on their own. But it's really difficult. I was just talking to a varsity coach the other day about this. By the time you get 16 and 17-year-old kids, it's hard to fix those habits. And sometimes you got, as a coach, you're going to have to kind of mold to your team and figure out where you can put them in positions of success.
Yes, 100%. And I think it goes along with another quote, which is you don't rise to the level of the challenge, you fall to the level of your training, right? And sometimes even though you've trained things, the habits are so ingrained that they're hard to break. And it's not a, even if you do it every day, when push comes to shove, they're going to go right back to whatever they've done for their whole life. And so to your point, that's where the multi-sport piece plays in. That's where the getting reps at live competition and whatever it happens to be, at freaking table tennis or bowling, wherever it is that you're competing, that bleeds over into your sports approach. All right, let's wrap with this. What's an insult you've received that you're most proud of?
Hold on, let me just go through my texts that I've received from some of my fellow coaches. Wow, that's a prepare for that one.
Good. That's when I'll get the best answer.
Yeah, I think it's going back to you don't know what you're doing. You're too young. And I would always, I'd been coaching youth sports and since I was 15, 16 years old. So by the time I was 25, I already had 10 years in the game. And I'm like, hey, you can say whatever you want to me. I'm doing my best. And I've been in this for a long time in multiple facets. And I try and approach it with the right mentality and doing what's best for the kids. I think I was thinking about this before. I think we get insults a lot as coaches and as ADs, and we tend to take things personal quite a bit. I think one of the best things that I took in was I'd go home after a game frustrated, or if a parent said something, or if a coach said something, or I was as an AD dealing with different issues. And I take things so personally, and it would really mess with me for a few days, and because I cared so much. And I quickly learned by the end of the night, I'd ask myself, I'm like, hey, are you going to remember this incident or this insult in five years from now? And if my initial reaction was no, I would tell myself to let it go immediately. And it helped a lot, because there's things that I still do remember. And I took those insults a little more personally and learned and grew from it. And if I was like, you know what, I'm not going to even remember this 5 weeks, 5 days from now, I need to let it go. It's okay. I'm not going to win over everybody, but as long as I know I'm giving my best effort day in and day out, that's all I can do.
I like that approach, right? What's important now, not what's gonna matter down the road. I like that's good perspective, that if you can have that when you're in the midst of being super frustrated, it helps ground you. So coach, thanks for being here today. Appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you more in the future if you ever get down here to God's country, because I don't get back up that way anymore.
For sure. I'm definitely going to come down there and maybe golf a few rounds and hit you up.
Let's go. Looking forward to it.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.